Hello and welcome to another episode of the MicroISV show here on Channel 9. I'm Michael Lehman, technology evangelist for MicroISVs here at Microsoft, along with my co-host Bob Walsh from Safari Software. And today we're going to be joined by Pam Slim of Escape from Cubicle Nation. And I'm doing MicroISV evangelism. You can find out more information at my blog or at projectglidepath.net. And Bob has a new book out called Clear Blogging, which you can find at clearblogging.com. And you can find his company at safarisoftware.com. So, hello, Pam, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And hello, Bob.
Hey there.
So, how can we all escape from Cubicle Nation, Pam?
Well, it's a simple and complicated process, if I may say so. The first step is deciding that you really want to, and getting clear as to why it is that you're wanting to escape. I often say that hating your current situation is not enough to propel you as a successful entrepreneur. So the first part with folks is usually figuring out what is it about a corporate job that's really not working and exploring if indeed there is a solid business venture that they're really excited about, in which case there really is a good process for getting out of the cube and starting your own business.
Well, you know, in your blog and your podcast and now your radio show, you talk about the corporate world at work. And I guess one question that we should ask just to, you know, hit that particular mark is, why would anyone want to escape from the wonderful world of corporate life?
Well, I know contrary to what some people may think, because the name of my blog, Escape from Cubicle Nation, certainly has some emotional under or overtones that would imply that corporate world is terrible and you want to escape. And in fact, that is the way that it is for a lot of people. But a lot of people really do like the comfort of the corporate world. They're comfortable with the current situation. So for me, it's as much a state of mind as it is realizing that for a certain kind of person, the current corporate environment really does not fit with how they're meant to work or how they're meant to live. And I think that in my own background, I actually was a corporate consultant, an independent consultant to corporations for many years. And so I feel like I did my research firsthand of meeting with a lot of employees that felt like, especially I'd say in the last really 5 years especially, but 5 to 10 years, there have been significant changes in the corporate environment that definitely make it feel less stable for people. There's been a lot more reorganizations, downsizing, outsourcing, and certainly for programmers, the reality of offshoring and the impact on a lot of corporate jobs that in prior years or decades were seen as a lot more stable. So there are things about the corporate environment today, I think, that are less attractive for people than perhaps I remember in the early days when I started out my own corporate career in my 20s, and certainly thinking about it for my parents. So there's some of the instability, and there's also people that just really don't feel comfortable working in a large organization where they're not really able to speak their mind. There can be a lot of corporate politics. Oftentimes, you don't have a choice about who is managing you, and it can be somebody that has a lot of influence over your day-to-day happiness, given their management skill or lack thereof. So for many people, they just don't feel like they're in the right place. It's not the right environment anymore.
Okay, we covered that. My question now is, if you've decided that you're ready to escape from your large company background, your large company professional life,
yeah,
what's the biggest obstacles to starting your own business?
Well, there are a number of them. And I think one of the first ones, which I find with a lot of clients and a lot of blog readers that send me messages, is there's just a psychological fear that comes with leaving something that you perceive as being stable, leaving a predictable paycheck and benefits and so forth, in order to go into unknown territory. And so that can be a stumbling block, because if it's something that you've never done before, it's just unknown. And for people that like to have a plan, they like to test, they like order and structure, they like to feel, like a friend of mine used to say, there's water in the pool before they jump. It can be a very frightening venture, which can actually stop people from even making any moves at all, just because they feel afraid. And sometimes they have people, significant people in their lives, like their husband or their wives, or parents or others that tell them that they're crazy for wanting to do it. So that's one obstacle. I think another one, which is significant, is not really having a well thought out and developed business plan. That's how you get the water in the pool, is moving from knowing that you want to leave with possibly a vague idea about what it is that you'd want to do, maybe a software application that you want to create or a product that you want to build. But you need to take it from that conceptual stage to really work it through and make sure that you do the research and plan to find out if there is a market for what you're offering and if you have the kind of skills and capabilities necessary to really, you know, run your own venture, sell it, market it, develop your infrastructure, et cetera.
So on one hand, you've got psychological and emotional and relationship issues that need to be addressed. And then the second sounds like you have to move past just the I want it stage to the stage that you're actually doing something about it. And that doing at least is planning to make sure that that pool is full so you don't jump in, you break both legs.
Yes. It's true, and it's for some people, it depends on who the person is. For some people, they just know that they want to leave, and they have a feeling that working as an independent person would be a lot better just from a lifestyle perspective, so they have a feeling they'd be happier as an entrepreneur or self-employed, but they don't really have a firmly developed business idea. So for those kind of folks, a lot of the early work that I do with them is in helping to really identify what is that work that they would really be excited about doing and making sure that they get some clarity around that before then doing the piece of really going out in the market, doing the research, creating a business plan. And for others, that they could have total clarity. They may have been harboring a business idea for years. They're finally ready to do it, and they don't need to do any of that introspective analysis stuff. They just want to get rolling. So in that case, It's more about the business plan and figuring out about the market.
What about the difference between the way people do things in corporations and large organizations and the way you have to do it if, you know, the company consists at least at the beginning of just you? Does that pose a, I mean, do they, when people jump, do they need to have, you know, basically seen the movie a little bit to know what type of life a startup has to live?
I think it's helpful. I always think it's helpful in the process of researching something new that you're interested in, be it just another career or something like starting your own business. The more you're able to talk to people who are actually doing it to get a sense of what the reality is like day to day, and maybe even doing a little job shadow, if possible, it is going to be helpful. That's part of understanding and building a realistic picture of what it's going to take to get things done. But I think the reality is when you find very quickly, what a lot of people find when they're coming out of a corporate environment is they had all kinds of assumptions about things that just got done that seemed a bit magic in the background, like their infrastructure running and their computer goes down and they just pick up a phone and call the help desk and it gets fixed. Mm-hmm. All these kind of things that in a corporate environment, you know, the bills are paid, you go to the office supply closet and just grab a bunch of supplies. All of a sudden when it's you, you're the one that's actually having to pay for each piece of those office supplies or that office equipment. You have to figure out how you're going to manage, you know, your infrastructure getting things done. So people can quickly realize that in my experience, it's the best to be surrounding yourself with other kinds of resources to help, because if you try to do it all yourself, which is a very common thing that happens with new entrepreneurs, they just think, I have to do everything myself, the accounting, the designing my website, you know, selling, and hardly anybody has all of those capabilities, nor should you be spending all of your time doing those things. So I think that's probably the biggest shift, is unplugging from the big mothership and realizing you have to kind of pedal the bike yourself in order to create the energy. It actually has a very energizing effect, because you feel real tangible results and immediately see that when you put your effort and energy into doing something, there is a result, which is not the case for many who are in a corporate job. And the best thing is you don't have to attend so many damn meetings, which is really the bane of many corporate employees' existence.
Well, besides professional resources, does it make sense to hang out with other entrepreneurs and startups in, you know, actual physical world, or for that matter, I guess you could do it in Second Life or online.
Yeah, that's one shift that is also surprising for people. I think if you've grown up in your career in a corporate job, probably most of your friends and acquaintances are also in that environment. That's often the way it is, just naturally, because they're people you hang out with all the time. And where, of course, you still want to maintain those friendships and stay connected with people that you care about, they often are really not going to understand at all what the reality is of what you're dealing with. And so part of that transition planning that you do for yourself as you move from corporate to entrepreneurship is also looking for who are some new friends and mentors and people that can really support you that do have more of an understanding of the kind of experience that you're having. And I've seen it myself a lot online. There can be really wonderful forums. I know, Bob, you participate, for example, in the Joel on Software Forum, Business of Software, where people can post questions, get feedback, feel like they have support from people that are in the same boat that they are. And that is actually a really important piece, because you will find yourself sometimes, if you're trying to explain what you're going through to people that are still employees and are not part of that world, they might be interested for a while, but then they just start to glaze over. And you need people who really understand it and can keep reinforcing for you that you're moving in a good direction if you are, and if you really need that external validation.
Mm. Well, one thing I've noticed, and this may just be a reflection of me, I will be the first to say that, but it's easy to hang out among people who dream and wish and sort of like, one day I'd like to be able to do this, is how they start almost every other sentence. And I found that didn't get me very far. When I started hanging out with people, well, like you, who've actually gone out and done it, that was an entirely different experience.
Yeah, it is. It's about, there's something that I think is very comfortable in where we can establish relationships where, we are kind of in that dreaming stage and people wistfully look. I think it happens a lot also in the corporate environment where people do feel trapped to some extent. I would say they trap themselves. They choose to be trapped because nobody's forcing you to go to that job. But it can be kind of that wistful mentality of just thinking about it and thinking someday, maybe I'll get to that. And there's something that's just really motivating when you can talk about, when you're talking with people that are actually taking action. They're doing things, as you said, they're moving forward, they're confronting some of the same fears, and I think there's a really healthy peer pressure. I don't mean it in a competitive way, but in a healthy way of, I look to you, Bob, and I say, okay, Bob's on his second book. Come on, Pam, you're talking about yours. you got to get moving. You got to get doing it. And the same is true where somebody is just starting their business and they're talking to somebody else who's actually doing it. There's something that has a really good motivation. And you also see it. You need to see the reality of somebody who is actually successful and somebody who's really on a peer level for you, where you look at them and you say, you know what? We really pretty much have the same experience and makeup. None is better than the other. If this person can do it, then I think I can do it too.
Well, okay, that makes sense to me, but one thing that holds a lot of people back, and I've been there myself, and it's called money. It's called those wonderful, nice, fleece-lined handcuffs of a steady paycheck or a steady amount of contract work coming in as a programmer. How do you let go of one of the things we all seem to have a whole lot of interest in, which is money?
Well, I don't think you should necessarily let go of it unless you you really made a plan or you have other means of supporting yourself in your life. It totally makes sense that people are going to have concerns about cash flow and generating income, because that's part of what you have to do, especially if you have a family to support or you have a mortgage or whatever it is that are your financial obligations.
But there's going to be one thing that's true, is that when you start a business, your expenses are always more than you anticipate. Revenue tends to be slower than you expect, and those bills just keep rolling in.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? What's a good thing to do if you can do it?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it does go back to good planning and making sure that you have, as to the best of your knowledge, when you are doing your business plan and you're making your assumptions, that you're not just pulling them out of the air, but you're also testing them with people like we were talking about that have already done it themselves. So again, as you said, you can't always know, and that's absolutely, experience has played out the same thing. From what I see with clients is what you say, always spend a little more than you think and you always make a little bit less. However, if you're not just leaping, you're not just quitting your job with no safety net and planning on immediately a month later having cash coming in, if you really take your time to do planning, do things like pay down debt as much as possible. You could get a home equity line of credit or a business line of credit or a whole bunch of different vehicles that you have for making sure that you have some safety nets in place financially, of course, savings, other ways of generating income in case your main idea doesn't work. You might want to have a backup plan where, for some people, it's contracting their services in a different way, maybe not creating a product, but in going back to doing a little bit of consulting. For other people, it's making sure that they still have some doors open in relationships with recruiters and so forth if they need to go back and get another job. But you want to have as good a plan as you can and make sure that you just set up your financial life to meet some of your interim goals and do checkpoints. So if you start for the first 3 months and it's wildly different than you thought, you shouldn't just continue down the same path without maybe making some adjustments. Mm-hmm. And that's where you want to think about contingencies and backup plans. And I find that people often look at the act of quitting a corporate job and going on their own as a complete final jumping off a cliff, that's it. You know, mm-hmm. You do it and that's it. So you're either going to be successful or you're going to splat on the valley floor. And in fact, you can test it much like when you take a new job. You often have that same thing, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know if you're going to be laid off, if you're going to hate it, but somehow we look at it in a different way. And, you know, people are laid off, and there is really, we like to believe there's stability in having a predictable paycheck, but to me it's often more dangerous to think mm-hmm. that that's going to continue indefinitely, which many people do, and then all of a sudden they're shocked and they haven't done any contingency planning.
You mean that wonderful illusion of stability?
It's an illusion.
Okay. I guess things like mortgages and other, shall we say, high-priced ticket items like children's education, a few other things, they tend to be the domain of people who, like me, have reached middle age. Please don't reply that I have already passed middle age. But what happens to those people who are not in their 20s, they're in their 30s, they have family responsibilities, they have, all sorts of things. Is it still possible when people are in their 30s and 40s and even 50s, when they've worked for a company, large companies all their life, can they make the jump? Or are they sort of, the bird has been in the birdcage too long and they'll never be able to fly away?
They absolutely can make the jump. I mean, really, I've seen people of all ages, and at each age, there are going to be a little bit different considerations. I was just talking to somebody earlier today who is much younger, who's 24, but his main concern was, how is anybody going to believe I have any experience, and feeling insecure mm-hmm. about that because he hadn't been in the market for a long time. You can look at the advantage of somebody who has been in the working world for a long time, and you do gain a tremendous amount of skills that will be helpful to you when you are running your own business. But it's one of those things, I know I keep harping on the same topic, but it really is based on how careful that you're really doing your planning and how much you're getting a realistic assessment about if you really do have a good idea that has some market potential. You're able to name and describe the type of person that would be buying your product or your service, and that person has the money to pay, and they pay for similar products, or you see other competitors in that space. You're clear as to why you would really be better than somebody else if you ever offer a better service or design a better product. And so a lot of it is how it is that you're actually mitigating that financial risk by really doing good work and making sure it's something you're excited by. And the other thing is, and I when you're clear about what your financial goals are, and in people with people that are married and there's another spouse that's working, those are some of the trade-offs that you can make too, mm-hmm. where you make a decision as a couple as to maybe, you know, for a year or two, that one is willing to take a little bit more of the financial burden while the other goes through the experimentation of trying to start up a business and making sure that it works. Just like the same thing happens if one person decides to go back to graduate school, which is very common, and often they're hardly making any money, and the other spouse, you know, continues working, and you know, you kind of balance it that way. So I think, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can look at it. There's a price that really is paid also by staying in a situation that makes you tremendously unhappy, and it's a very concrete price that often for people is their health, where they have really pretty significant health issues because mm-hmm. of not being happy. It results in impacting your kids. When if you have kids and they see you going to work miserable every day, that has a big impact on your relationship. So the financial piece is an important one, but I think it's also important to highlight the price that you pay for not doing something that you really care about and not even trying it. Again, you can try it, and if it doesn't work, it's okay. You have other options. If you find you're not cut out for it, that's okay. You can always go back to being an employee and either spending more time learning and developing skills that you need or spending more time developing the product on the side, for example. Or you might decide that, you know, it was enough to test it and find out it wasn't for you, and then you can be a little bit happier in your corporate job.
Well, one thing that I wonder, because we are talking about making a big transition, and you're going out and the rest of the people are staying, should you tell the people that you work with your plans, or is that really not going to work out that well?
That's a really tricky one, and I've seen it work both ways. I had one of my really frequent blog readers from India that just wrote me, and he actually wrote a blog post about it saying, never tell your coworkers your plans. One of my frequent blog readers wrote a blog post saying that he did tell some of his coworkers about his entrepreneurial plans, and I think he might have even told his manager, thinking that he had a good relationship with him. And it ended up, he said, where it really had a negative impact because they saw him as not being committed, and it really changed a lot the dynamic in his day job, and he wasn't ready to leave. So it depends on the relationship you have with folks at work. You always are going to take the risk, and I think you need to realize as soon as you open your mouth and you tell somebody that you are planning on leaving, you have to have a plan in place in which you actually would. Because sometimes corporations have what I fondly call the mafia mentality, where you're in the family all the way or you're out of it. And as soon as
the horse in your bed,
I mean, it's a little scary, but and it's funny. Even though on the other side of it, of course, they can never guarantee employment and can terminate employees at will, you know, for no reason. Somehow it's seen as being disloyal if you are wanting to work on your own. And there are enlightened companies where that's not the case, and that's wonderful. So you really have to assess the safety of your environment and just realize you are taking a risk if you do that. You just need to weigh it with what the potential return would be.
So, Pam, I was going to ask you about the process of setting up your business and finding ways to hold yourself accountable. One of the things that I've experienced over the years, before I joined Microsoft, I spent 20 years as an independent consultant, and one of the things that was really challenging for me as a independent, because the people with whom I worked, my clients, obviously weren't going to hold me accountable, and I didn't have another person who was part of my business in that aspect. So one of the things that numerous people on this show have said is, you know, don't start a company just by yourself, or if you do, you know, at least try to find somebody else who can bounce things off of. What's your thoughts on both, should you start something by yourself or always have a partner? And secondly, if you don't have a partner, how do you hold yourself accountable? How do you make sure that you actually achieve your goals? How do you make sure that you, if you have these checkpoints, that you actually stop and make the checkpoint and make the decisions? I mean, it's a whole different environment being on your own than it is in the corporation. You don't have a boss that you have to report to. You don't have, you know, commitments you have to live up to. It's a lot more self-discipline.
It's really true, and for some people it is. You know, gosh, should I watch Law & Order episodes all day if I can, or should I work on developing my new marketing plan? And it can be, especially I think early on in the transition, a very strange feeling when there's not immediate things that you're accountable for. You don't have to check in at the weekly staff meeting and say what progress that you've made on things. So in terms of partnering or not partnering, I personally have been on my own for about a little more than 10 years, and I have always chosen to have my business set up as being independent, so I don't have any employees, anybody. I've hired people at different times to work on projects, but all as independent contractors. But what I did always have is a group of people that are in my similar industry where we often work together on projects to kind of, you know, stay motivated, talk to each other. I've had what are called mastermind partners at different times where I've identified somebody who is in a similar stage of business. I just did this when I was in the transition from corporate consultant to now focusing solely for new entrepreneurs. And we worked together for about a year, having a phone call once a week where we would check in and talk about what we were working on and gave each other encouragement. And because we were in very similar and not, but yet non-competitive businesses, it was very motivating to kind of keep going. So that, I think, is a really wonderful thing. I actually met her through a class that I was taking, which is yet another thing I found to be very helpful. When you are doing things, for example, if you need to set up a marketing system, for example, right? Or, you know, set up your whole, all your marketing systems and processes, or you want to learn about selling. Now there are a lot of virtual resources that you can use where you might participate like in a group coaching program or a teleclass program. And often as part of that, you have assignments of what you need to develop and you might report them back to your classmates and then to whoever is teaching. And I, that's actually how I started my blog. I was taking a class, and that was one of the assignments, is creating a blog. It really motivated me to get that up and running for things that are more related to building your own infrastructure or marketing your business. I've never had any trouble getting things done that I had to, because I just don't get paid if I don't finish them. So there's something very motivating about that, is I always make sure I have very hard, concrete deadlines with my clients, and if I don't meet them, it really affects my reputation. I never, you know, missed a deadline in all the 10 years I've been in business, because I knew that really that my whole credibility and my business foundation was based on meeting my own deliverables.
And you're not writing software.
And I'm not writing software. It's true.
It's a huge different thing with deadlines and software, but And what you said makes great sense, masterminds and finding someone to help you that way. In your experience, though, in my experience, I found it very easy to meet the customer deadlines.
Yeah.
And I found it very easy to push down my own sort of soft deadlines, I will get to doing the books for this month tomorrow, and it turns out to be the 10th of the next month, and that kind of thing. What would you say to people... And I guess maybe to turn the question around, what sort of skills beyond what you do in terms of the work product that you produce do you think are crucial for someone who's deciding to go into business for themselves? How do you evaluate yourself and say, am I really, do I have the appropriate skills? Or if not, how can I identify which ones I have and don't have, and where may I need to go get some professional help?
Yeah. Well, those can be just having an understanding of all the different areas that you need to make sure that you have covered. There's a resource that I often use, and I'm doing a program with them right now, which is Startup Nation, startupnation.com, and they have something called 10 Steps to Open for Business, which is basically online resources materials that outline everything that you need to make sure you take care of as you develop your business and your idea. And there are things, for example, you know, considerations you might have for your infrastructure of legal implications of your decisions, or if you're developing, you know, software, you might need to have agreements about who really has the ownership. You know, if you're developing something on behalf of clients, you need to make sure you understand different accounting rules. So if you can, that's a good source for just having a checkpoint and saying, am I familiar with all of this information that I need to know as I develop my business in different stages? And if you don't have those skills, the first question for me is, are they really of interest to you, and would it be long-term benefit to your business in order for you to develop those, in which case it makes sense to learn, to, you know, get a mentor, get a coach, take a class, whatever it is that you need to develop those. But in many cases, I find, you know, things like, for many people, accounting, legal, insurance, all kinds of, you know, financial planning, that's something that's much better left to somebody who really loves to do that. And that can be, actually, that's a little piece of the accountability picture as well, because if I know that I need to get my bookkeeper my financial information once a month, which I do, I actually have an in-office assistant who comes in, gathers all my information, and mails it off to her once a month. That makes sure that I get it done, but it's not me that's doing it. I'm having other people that are more capable of doing it take care of it. So it's a matter of balancing, you know, what are things that you really want to learn about that are going to be helpful for you. And it, like, selling is one thing. I know a lot of people really can't even stand to think about it. But I would say of all the different skills that you need in order to run a business, what's really going to give you some teeth is being able to understand it and have some experience with sales and marketing. Even if after you grow your company a little bit bigger, you may choose to not, you know, take on that role.
So, obviously, things like Startup Nation, you know, look like they've got a lot of really good value there. If someone wanted to do something more local, where would you suggest people look in their own local environs in order to maybe find some classes or some groups or whatever? What can you do, you know, to go hang out with the kind of people that do this and find out information?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of SCORE. That's the Service Corps of Retired Executives, which is a nonprofit association affiliated with the Small Business Administration. And they have chapters in most of the major cities across the U.S. And that is free consulting, free unlimited advice and consulting, which to me, you can't beat free.
Wow, free and, as in beer, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the greatest untapped resources I've ever found. And I didn't find out about them till I moved here to Arizona from California. And I just think it's a great resource. They often are dying to find people to work with because a lot of people don't know that that service exists. So it's SCORE, SCORE.org. And they have a lot of classes that are related to the things they might consult around. So how to create a business plan, basic accounting systems, copyright, things like that. And they will offer those when you go to their local office. They can give you a list. You can also go on the website and probably look by zip code or something to see who's close to you. So that's always a good local source. The other thing is community colleges. And also universities can have really good extension programs. I did a lot of training when I was in the Bay Area through UC Berkeley Extension that has often very excellent classes that can be a semester long, maybe a couple of evenings a week, that you can take around certain areas that will also probably have people that are interested in that topic in your class. And they often, for those university extension programs, have really seasoned working professionals who are teaching them who can be good resources for you later on. So those are some starting points.
They sound like excellent starting points. I've talked to the people at SBCA, Small Business Administration, and they have all these classes that are basically going begging for people to come in.
Yeah.
If you need to get the basics of business down, and you do need to get the basics of business down, they're excellent as a way of getting up to speed. You know, one thing I was kind of wondering is, you've been doing this now for a decade. Do you see it getting easier to be your own startup or harder? And is it easier financially, easier psychologically or technologically, or how?
For me, I'm one of these weird birds because I didn't think I was ever cut out to be an entrepreneur at all. I quit my corporate job because I just went through a merger and acquisition and all my great managers left, and I turned 30 and I was just ready to do something else. So I just quit. And then I started working. I basically called my own manager who had gone to HP and said, we'll work for food. You know, this, I quit in August and this was about December. And I just started contracting because I knew I needed to generate some income. As soon as I started, it was just, I can remember the day. The moment I did, all of a sudden I felt like I'd been reborn, and I went, oh my God, I'm meant to be this way. I can never go back. And I've always felt that. I feel personally a huge motivation and energy by running things myself, my own way. It excites me. I love it. I love the business development side. I generally love the work that I do. So it gets easier just in that when you can go through a rough spot and or, you know, a hard time or something, having the experience of knowing that you made it through those other ones is really helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, going through the dot-com bust, well, you know, boom and bust was extremely helpful for me because I had, you know, I saw firsthand what happened, and it really gave me a lot of good experience to draw on. And I saw people that made it through successfully and those that didn't. And a lot of times it was just based on their attitude and how they looked at every experience as really being a learning experience. So, you know, it's for me, it's something I could, I say never. I just can't imagine ever going back as an employee. I just can't see it.
Any pieces of technology that you'd recommend? For instance, what do you use for your day-to-day, you know, computer needs?
My day-to-day, this is probably an area that I need a lot of help and consulting in. I am a Microsoft, you know, user, and then I use the whole suite of Microsoft products, and I use Outlook to manage my calendar and those kind of things. I'm sure that I could organize things a lot better and probably use technology more effectively. But I'm used to, that's probably more the vestiges of coming out of the corporate world. And because I was a corporate consultant, I was really used to using the applications that are most often used, used with others. So I'm not really a technology nerd. Have my laptop, have my desktop, you know, my little backup systems, but I don't really have strong recommendations for people, especially I think within your target audience that might have some really specific needs and some tools that might be nifty. I'm always looking for those things myself,
okay.
Although I always want to hire somebody else to implement it for me.
Okay. Well, I think you mentioned at one point that you're using a virtual assistant.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like?
Well, it's great. And a virtual assistant is a live human being. Mine's name is Wanda, and she lives in Canada. But what a virtual assistant is basically a new way that people have really created a business around administrative support, usually a little bit higher-end administrative support, for people that are working independently, like ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, for example, I use Wanda all the time to do a lot of my back-end services. So I have classes and people that register for things, and they might, you know, run into problems with accessing a certain page, or they need follow-up, or I might conduct a teleclass and have a recording and I need a follow-up message. I have it set up with Wanda where we have systems and agreements. So I'll do certain pieces of my work, and then she takes over and just, you know, takes care of the rest for me administratively. So that has worked out really, really well. And it's looking at, if you are going to have a business that is basically virtual, which mine really is at this point, because I'm mainly working with people, coaching over the phone, and a lot of what I do is outreach with people really around the world, you know, via my blog and other means. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure as much as possible that my processes are automated. Things like I have good systems for generating new leads for my list. I have a mailing list for my monthly e-zine, and she can help also to post articles in different article directories that I might write, you know, to kind of leverage the work that I do. So virtual assistant is great, and there are all kinds of people. I do mine through a particular coaching company that I work with, Multiple Streams of Coaching Income, because she specializes in my kind of business. But I think for a lot of people, you know, they can do things like do your billing for you, do some follow-up customer service, and it's really great. I also have an in-office person who comes in for 3 hours a week to manage just some of the paper, you know, related to the business, and that's also a really big help.
You know, I could really see a micro-ISV service industry starting to form out there of people who maybe they're not ready to go out and write their own product and sell it, but they know what we're talking about. They live the life, and what they're doing is they're supporting, they're acting as sort of the, you know, the executive support for two or three other micro ISVs. That might enable us to do something called holidays.
Yes. I think you have a great business idea, Bob. I mean, it really is. I think it's the more people that get out there and start to do it, they do need to have some of that, those resources and support, because nobody wants to do it all themselves. And if you have great people who can back you up, it does mean that you don't have to be working all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the key things is also trying to find someone who's going to do your support who has some idea of what your business does.
Yes.
I mean, presumably with your virtual assistants, you screened them to make sure that they understood what you did or at least knew your jargon or whatever before you brought them in.
Well, yeah, and with mine, I said there's a business that's focused on building what they call a multiple streams coaching business, which includes not just individual coaching, but, you know, classes and teleclasses and all that. Their virtual assistant business probably came out of that same kind of thinking that Bob had of they were working with coaches, and all of a sudden they said, hey, everybody needs the same kind of support. Why don't we provide that as part of the service? And they've created a very thriving virtual assistant practice, and just like you're saying, Michael, they're totally versed in knowing how what they need to do to build the back-end infrastructure to support that business. So I think you guys should take that idea and run with it.
Well, please, anyone who's listening to this podcast, virtual assistant Michael ISV business, email me quick.
We're giving you a good idea, guys. You should take it and run with it.
Exactly. And please, Pam, if you do have some links regarding where people could find virtual assistants and so forth, please send them along so we can put them along in the post for this podcast, because I think that's a really crucial thing, at least certainly based on my experience, that if you can find someone reasonably priced that you can offload some of that stuff to, then those things don't fall through the cracks.
Yes, I definitely will do that, because there are some good resources that are you can look up directories, and again, it doesn't matter, the person doesn't have to be in your same geography. That's the beauty of it. They can be somewhere else, but you can look at it in terms of the cost benefit of doing certain activities. And if you bill out at, I don't know, $100-$150 an hour, and you can pay somebody $25 an hour to take care of something that frees you up to be doing what you really need to generate revenue, it totally makes sense. And I personally hate to do accounting and bookkeeping. I can't stand it. I don't do it well. So I joyfully write my checks to my bookkeeper and my accountant to do it for me.
Pam, any last advice you'd like to give all those micro ISV startups?
I think the advice is to make sure that you really take the time to understand yourself first. That often what people do is they rush to thinking immediately about what could I do in the marketplace that can immediately make me money, because they're worried about what we talked about earlier, which is just losing that paycheck and getting some financial stability. And if you're just following the money, that can lead you on a path that ends up with creating a business that's kind of like being an employee, where you might not be terribly excited by it, but you're just doing it in order to get your paycheck. So I think before you get too far down the road of developing something just because you're desperate to leave your corporate job, spend the time to do a little bit of introspection and really think about, what do you really care about? What kind of life do you want to have? How do you want to design that life? What would be really interesting to work on? And if you spend the time up front to do that so that you choose a business idea that's really you're passionate about and that's motivating to you, it's going to mean that you're going to have a much better experience as then you do the good, hard planning work of creating a business plan around your product. And most people just kind of skip that step and then find themselves a year or so down the road making money, but yet still not quite feeling happy.
I know that feeling personally, and when you start more than one business over the course of your career, you'll find out sometimes you do that and sometimes you learn from that how important it is to know exactly what it is you're getting into, and at least at the same time being flexible so that you can see opportunities when you've started something and it turns out it's something completely different.
That's right. And really, you're only going to find out by experimenting with it, because there's other people that can sit there and they have the business plan and everything thought out and they just are planning so much. There comes a point where you just have to do it. You have to experiment and try it and then get that real data of, is this interesting to you or not? And as you said, Michael, you might go down a certain path thinking it's the way you want to go and find out you take a total left turn, but it could be a great left turn. And you'll never take that turn if you don't set out on your new path.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we interviewed Jessica Livingston recently, who said that PayPal originally started out as a cryptography software company, having nothing to do with processing money.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Great example.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think that's we've come to the end of this show. Pam, it's been very great to have you on the show. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
All right. So this is Michael Lehman and Bob Walsh, co-hosts of the Mycorrhize V Show, saying we'll see you next time on Channel 9. And to find out more about Mycorrhize V evangelism, check out channel9.msdn.com, as well as projectglidepath.net. And to find out more about Bob's software and books and blogs, check out safarisoftware.com, clearblogging.com, and mymycorrhizev.com. And we'll see you next time on Channel 9.